Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Tonarics podcast. I am your host, James, and I'm joined by my good friend, Timmy Long.
Hi, everyone.
Timmy's looking strong, isn't he, lads?
I don't know about that. I'm only after COVID.
The COVID diet is after doing him the world of good. He can't taste nothing. So
still can't taste.
You still can't taste.
I'm three weeks after it, and I still can't taste.
Yeah, I know someone who's, I think they're like 2.5 weeks now, and they're saying that they still can't smell or taste either.
Both of them. Yeah. Taste and smell. It's nice. Great because everything tastes the same.
You can just eat anything now, so.
But I don't want to, you see, because if I start tasting chocolate again, I'm.
That's it, it's down the drain.
Not good, let's just say. I was going to say effed, but we won't, just in case, because so I know you have a lot of young people listening. They will probably listen.
We might do a video on Timmy's COVID nutrition plan, maybe one of those.
You could start selling, you know, those ads that come up on YouTube before you watch videos. Let me sell you this diet plan. We can sell, like, the COVID nutrition
Here's
plan.
The COVID.
Yeah.
Get COVID. A lot of people, I think I must have lost a stone.
And it's mad, like, a lot of, it's now at the stage where, like, I'm seeing, like, it's kind of creeping into, like, my inner circle. Do you know what I mean? Like, people around you are starting to get it.
It's gone from hearing of somebody having it
to knowing somebody who has
people,
it.
Everybody. Yeah. And it's creeping its way into your own family home and whatever, wherever you live.
We let the RT News deal with the COVID and we deal with the rest of it. So, Roman is on the deck. Say hi, Ron.
Hi, Ron.
Anna's in the audience. Say hi, Anna.
Hi, lad.
Shotgun Media.
Yeah.
That's Anna's the videographer and a friend of ours.
Yeah.
And, our guest today, Sean Downey.
What's the
story? Sean, you were on Davy's Toughest Team. You're the third participant of Davy's Toughest Team, which was a TV programme on RT. Mm-hmm. It was about bringing young people who has come through adversity on a journey, which was meant to be the base camp in Everest, but because of lockdown, it was Cantool.
Sadly, it didn't happen, yeah.
Yeah, it went to Cantool, but it looked amazing. We've had Keane Amani and... Conor Harrison. So you're very welcome on.
Thank you very much.
You were on Davy's Toughest Team and you did really well on it. You came across really well and you did Cork Proud.
Thank you.
How did you end up getting on it? Do you know what? We'll go way back.
Okay.
Who is Sean Downey and where is he from?
So I'm from the Glen. I'm born 6th of May 1999, so I'm 22 years of age. I grew up in a house in the Glen in an estate called Mangerton Close.
Oh, yeah.
And that's where my dad lives. And I would have grew up there with my mum and my dad from the age of like 0 to 7. I think we might have moved away once and then moved back. When I was 7 years of age, I went into foster care for the first time in my life. Me and my brother went in. There was just problems happening at home. I think I was in foster care for what was probably a month and a half. So I'd spent 2 weeks in one family, 2 weeks in another family, 2 weeks in another family. I think this is actually the first time in any interviews that I've talked about being in foster care when I was younger. So people only know I went in at 10, but I had that little stint when I was younger. And it was just, it was kind of my behavior was very out of control when I was a kid, just due to things happening at home. So foster families didn't usually work out like what foster family would have me and my brother and then would say like, oh, we can't really deal with him. So kind of bounced around for a bit.
And we always kept with your brother.
I was always kept with my brother. I would have went crazy if I wasn't. And my brother was like a year and a half younger than me. So I just kind of felt like I had to protect him. And then after like a month and a half, my mom had managed to get a house. So at that time, we didn't have a house to go to. My mom had split from my dad. So we returned home and then I was at home from 8 to the age of 10. It wasn't 8, it was like 7.5 up to the age of 10. And then I guess I just had a lot of like issues that came from my family setting at the time. My dad's like a recovered alcoholic, and some of my older brothers are recovered addicts. So obviously I just had some traumas from the situations that happened growing up. And I guess I was just, I became a little bit too much for my mom to be able to handle as a single mother. She had my brother, who at the time would have been 8, and my two sisters, who at the time would have been like, one was just turning 18 and the other was 20. But everyone lived in this house in the Glen, in a new estate that my mom had gotten a house in. So I went into foster care, and I was in residential care from the age of 10 to 12. Now, for residential care, for people that don't know, regular foster care is you live with a family that isn't your own. Residential care is you live with staff. So
in a facility.
In a facility, yeah. It's, you can't even really call it a home. So from 8 in the morning to 3 in the day, there was 3 staff. Then from 3 in the day to 8 at night, there was 3 new staff. Then one of those staff would sleep there overnight, and another person would come in and stay up all night checking in on you. And I had to live in that from 10 to 12.
I know of people that worked in these facilities, but I wonder what it's like from the child's perspective.
Just like, it was like one of the most, like, obviously at the time I didn't realize it, but it was a very traumatizing place to live in, because I was living in a place where you'd have 17, 16 year olds coming in on emergency situations. Like, I come home from school having my dinner, and then all of a sudden this kid gets rushed in. And this kid gets rushed in from a situation that mightn't have been so good. So they're very angry. And then I end up getting hurt in the process. I had things in my room smashed quite regularly. Like, it was just, it was a bit all over the place. To a stage where my behavior actually got worse living inside that environment. Like,
I wonder, is it because the lack of uncertainty and the lack of safety?
Like, I was 10. Like, I thought I was going to the doctor. I thought I had a doctor appointment. And then I was moving from Cork to Tralee. Do you know? Within like the space of like 3 hours.
Do you know security? Like,
no. So I just ended up in this panicked state, and my behavior just progressively got worse.
What kind of behavior?
Was just like attacking staff members and breaking things. I once stole the keys to the car and tried to drive it through the window of the house. Like,
what about school then as well? Was school
different? Yeah, I was just, I got expelled in primary school. I got expelled from St. Mark's, the boys' school in the Glen, in like third class. They were like, nah, we can't have them anymore. Sorry. I didn't actually do third class. I stayed at home all year in third class, and then I went into fourth class. At that time, they thought maybe I had a learning disability, so I got an IQ test to see if I'd go, if COPE was the avenue for me. And like, I don't know if it's true, but my mom always says that like the doctor was so shocked. She was like, why is he getting tested for this? This is not, people just don't understand him. Like, he's not meant to be here. Because I'm quite an intelligent kid. I was into computers from a really young age. I made my first website at the age of 10. I started making videos when I was like 11 years of age, uploading them onto YouTube. I uploaded a video when I was like 11 that got like 3,500 views within like 48 hours. So like, I knew what I was doing. So, but my behavior was just kind of out of control, to a stage where an incident happened in the residential that I won't go into, but it was quite bad. And I ended up getting a caution that was really like, okay, we're not messing around anymore. Like, you need to cop on. And I got sent to a Garda Youth Diversion Program. Well. And in Tralee, in a place called Rahnan. And as part of this Garda Youth Diversion Program, I had to go to a music course, like a music workshops. And I didn't want to go. I was like, why would I go to music workshops? But I met a guy called Gary McCarthy, GMC, GMC Beats.
I did one of his workshops there. You did? With the youth workers there last year.
Yeah, what did you think of it?
It was brilliant. Yeah. Two days.
They're savage. Yeah. But I guess that was really the first time in my life. So we had our workshops for 4 weeks. And at the last workshop, when it was all wrapped up at like 5 p.m., I said to Gary, look, I wrote these raps. And he stayed there for an extra 2 hours after the workshop ended and recorded those raps with me. And that was the first time in my life, like, someone had like literally gone out of their way. Like, he was just a stranger, gone out of his way to do something like really nice and kind for me. Yeah. And then like, I just started to express myself. I remember then I asked for a microphone for my birthday in that residential. I got one, and I got a laptop, and I started making my own music. I think I made like 40 songs in like the space of like 2 months, to a stage where, because of that incident that I got sent to the Justice Project for, they were looking to send me into a secure residential unit, which is where you have bars and it's a lot more like monitored. But 6 months later, I moved into with a foster family in Middleton. So like I'd kind of taken a 180. Yeah. Now I was 13. Obviously my behavior still wasn't, like I still had a lot of issues. I was still getting quite angry, but it was like, it wasn't like looking to fucking hurt people angry. It was just like, oh, I'm angry and I'm 13. I'm going to throw a bit of a tantrum. So from 13 up to 15, then I just would try and attend any GMC workshop I could and would always be sending Gary my music, being like, here, listen to this. Was big into music. I got bullied at like 15 for making music. Put up a status on Facebook and it went viral. I think it got like 2,000 shares within like 24 hours.
Because making music and YouTube videos, it's kind of out of the ordinary. And if you stand out at that
like
age...
Like now it's terrible. Normal. Yeah, like now everyone does it. But I really... I like no one was doing it. And so I put up the status about being bullied and like I wasn't meant to put it... I obviously meant to put up a status, but I actually... it was a message that I'd emailed to my principal as I was sitting in the school at the bath... like in the bathroom in the school crying. And I emailed him and they brought me out and they came and got me and they were like, look, we're sorry, this is happening. But it's the same thing that I'd heard numerous times in school. So as they were talking to me, I posted that message as a status and the school had to come into me and be like, please remove the status. We can't answer our phones. Like we're getting tons of phone calls. The guards got involved. People got expelled from the school. Then that summer, an organization called EPIC, Empowering People in Care, picked me to go to a conference in Switzerland called CATS, Children as Actors for Transforming Society. And that conference is an international conference based around children's rights. And I didn't really have any fucking interest in children's rights at all. I went there and I just kind of saw it as a free holiday for the 7 days. I was just taking the piss, whatever.
Everybody looks at conferences like that.
And like to a stage where I remember the person who organized the conference came up to me and was like, can you at least pretend like you're interested in what's going on here? Like you'll never have to come back again. Don't worry. Just pretend like you're interested. Then I went home and I remembered he said that and it set with me. And I was like, oh, like I was really pissed off because I'm one of these people, don't tell me what to do. And he kind of felt disrespectful what he said. And so that was at the back of my mind. And I started making YouTube videos. I decided I didn't want to do music anymore because I'd been bullied from it. And I guess I just had a lot of anxieties around it. So I started making YouTube videos. I made a couple and they got like 30, 40 views. And then I made one talking about being in foster care and the journal.ie did an article on it. And like overnight, the article had 500,000 views.
Fuck.
It went crazy. My foster parents were like, how are people getting our number? Why are they ringing us? Ireland AM, the Ryan Tuberty show, everyone ringing. And being like, can we interview this kid? So I was like,
What age you had now?
I was 16. And I was like, yeah, cool, interview me. That's grand.
I'm still in school at that time, Sean.
Still in school. I'm in fourth year now at this stage. And so, yeah, cool, interview me. Tusla said no. Section 31 of the Child Care Act, Part C, I think it's Part C, I might be wrong, states that kids in care cannot be identified in the media.
Were they your guardian?
Tusla was my guardian,
and like, so it wasn't one of your parents?
No, it would have been Tusla and my foster parents. But this law says kids in care can't be identified in the media. They tried to tell me that I was identifying myself and YouTube was the media. So the journal.ie took down the article because Tusla wrote them a big angry letter. But they also contacted YouTube and YouTube said, well, this doesn't go against anything in our terms of service. So like, we're not taking down the video. So Tusla then brought me to court. And I went to court every Wednesday for 2 months with a solicitor called Eamon Carroll. Shout out to Eamon Carroll. He's a solicitor on North Main Street. Legend. We were like trying to figure out how I can keep this video up. And I wasn't going anywhere. And then I remember like one of the last court cases on a Wednesday. I think it had to have been in April because there was a lot of talk about the 1916 rising and the proclamation. Yeah. And I remember like the day before I went into court, I actually read the proclamation in school because we were talking about it. And there's a line that says, we will cherish all children of the nation equally, oblivious to differences fostered by an alien government. So I went into court and I read that out and I said, you are treating me differently. Any other kid in this country can make a video telling people where they live and why they live there, what their parents are like, what the people that look after them on a daily basis are like. True. And they couldn't say anything. They were like, oh, okay, we kind of are taking away your freedom of speech here. So then I walked out of that court with $2,500 and I bought myself a MacBook. I made them give me $2,500 from the court poor box, bought myself a MacBook and a new camera. And I started making YouTube videos like there was no tomorrow. that conference in Switzerland invited me back the next year to run the conference.
Fuck off.
For the next 3 years, I was going to Switzerland.
To be the MC? Yeah.
No, not to commentate it, but to actually have a say in what happens and the workshops.
Yeah.
So for the next 3 years, I've got to Switzerland once a year for 10 days and stay in this palace in a place called Montreux, which is such a beautiful place.
Mm.
I met the Queen of Belgium. I met the President of Malta. The President of Malta sent a letter to my foster parents' door, like inviting me to go there and kind of MC at a conference with Nora Fitzgibbon, rest in peace. She worked for Tusla at the time. We were both there speaking. I guess I was speaking on why kids should use their voice for change and why we should listen to them. And so I did that for a while, up until the age of 18. And then I guess when I turned 18, I started getting into drinking. I was in a relationship at the time, and when we started drinking, going out with people, friends, you know, the way people just start to drink.
Mm.
And then I just like very quickly didn't realize that I was drinking quite a lot, and I stopped making my videos. I think my last video, I uploaded videos after Davey's Toughest Team, but the last video before that, you can see there's like a 3 year gap.
And what bring it back? What did a drink give you that you didn't have in your normal life?
I think
to make
I guess I just felt a bit disconnected from people. I still do.
Yeah.
So I always feel disconnected. Yeah. Well, see, I'm actually quite extroverted, but I just don't like. I feel like sometimes people don't understand what I'm about. Mm. Like my energy is a bit too much for people, and I just felt this disconnect. Like I didn't know how to engage in conversation. As I was making those videos, I was also big into coding. I entered a Coder Dozo's coolest projects in 2015 with a heating system that I designed using an Arduino Uno, and I had programmed it using Python and a thing called Flask, which is like a backend for it. Made this heating system you could control from anywhere in the world on your mobile phone. I'd sat for nights in a place called Cork Internet Exchange in Holly Hill at the data center. I did my work experience there. I was the first ever junior software developer. So I was just a kid who spent a lot of time in my room creating things and just like, I made an AI that I could have a conversation with, like just because I was sick of talking to other people. I was like, I need to make things. And so then I guess when I became an adult, the staying in my room still happened, but it just got replaced with drink instead of creating things. And
were you living in Middleton still?
No, the problem is I had gotten my own place at this stage. See, I never drank when I lived in Middleton because I had foster parents and they were looking out for me and they were my support. But I guess when I turned 18, I became very afraid of being alone. I was away from my foster parents, away from my parents in my own accommodation now. And so I was just afraid of being alone. And so what I do in the evenings when I was alone is I drink, so I didn't have to feel that. It was like I'd get up, go to college, finish college, and then drink.
Mm.
And unless I was working. And that went on for a while. That went on up to Davey's Toughest Team. And Davey's Toughest Team came around and I applied for it talking about my life in foster care. And that was my story and the fact that I have ADHD, and I got picked. Now, at the time, my drinking had gotten really, really bad, but I was determined that it wasn't a problem. And so I didn't have to say it to these people because, you know, it's not an issue.
Mm.
And we filmed Davey's Toughest Team. And I think it's quite evident if you see, like, I wasn't looking after myself. I was unfit. I was unhealthy. But the problem was I could kind of manage it. Like I wouldn't say I was an alcoholic, but if, because I didn't like go through withdrawals when I gave up. So I don't want to call myself an alcoholic. But I think I was someone who just relied on this routine in my life. And I didn't want it to come to the forefront. I tried very hard in Davey's Toughest Team to hide it. And then when Davey's Toughest Team finished and I watched the show back, I just felt a bit embarrassed by myself, just how unfit I was. So I reached out to Davey Fitz's, one of Davey Fitz's personal trainers. His name is Darren Ward. And I went, look, man, I really need to change my life here. And I think I have a tool to kind of help other young people in the same situation. So the week after Davey's Toughest Team started, like the next week, I started getting up at 7:45 every morning. And I do a 25-minute workout on Instagram every morning with this guy, Darren Ward, every weekday morning.
Mm.
And I reach out to everyone, the news, everyone. I was like, please talk about this. Let's try to get as many young people as possible to be involved in this. And at the end of that month of doing that, I really enjoyed how good I felt.
Mm.
But I was I couldn't get over that. I was still waking up with hangovers, and I still found it hard. I was smoking 40 fags a day by the time Davey's Toughest Team came out. I couldn't really breathe. Like, even I've privated those videos because now that I don't smoke, I feel embarrassed at how bad my cough was. And, you know, and how distated I looked in some mornings just after like a night of drinking. And then after I did all the month full of, workouts. One night, me and my friends were in my room. At this stage, I'd moved out of that apartment and I was living in the Glen with my brother. And I had a full bottle of Violet gin in my hand, and that's what I was drinking that night. And it was like I was going to get fucked up. Sorry, cursing. And then I still don't know what happened, but I just remember like something just clicked in my head. I was just, all this time, all these thoughts I had about not wanting to drink. I guess I grew up in a house where if there's an issue and it happens, we just kind of act like it didn't happen. Yeah. Do you know? Like, if something bad happened, it didn't happen. Mm. So that's what I was doing. Every time I had those thoughts about wanting to stop drinking, the next day I'd be like, okay, it didn't happen. Today's a new day. Mm. And then that day I was just like, I can't do it. Like, I don't want to be doing this anymore. So I looked at my friends and I was like, lads, I think I'm going to stop drinking. And they kind of laughed. But then they realized, because I was like, lads, no, seriously, I'm going to stop drinking. And I fucked my bottle of pink gin out my bedroom window out to the back garden, like it smashed. And I was like, lads, I don't want to drink anymore. And I sent a text to Gary, GMC, who at this stage I'd been doing some work in the cabin, sent a message to him being like, Gary, I don't want to drink anymore. If I ever tell you I'm going out, please be like, no. Text my mom, text my dad, text all my friends, being like, look, this is really serious. Mm. I don't want to drink anymore. I wrote it on like sticky notes and stuck it up around my room, being like, you're not going to drink anymore. And I didn't drink anymore after that. But it was very, very difficult. It was like a lot of... I didn't go through withdrawals, but I went through a feeling of being fucking lonely. Yeah. I was like, oh, like, what do I do now? Like, what do I'm done.
You said earlier on there that you didn't think you were alcoholics, you didn't have withdrawals, but there's many types of alcoholic, like, or not wanting to give anybody a label.
Yeah.
But there's people that drink once a week and they have a huge amount of consequences from it.
Yeah.
And there's people that drink every day, but they both have problems with alcohol.
Yeah,
there was somebody like you did have a problem with alcohol, yeah, trying to like fill a void.
It created this paranoia in me all the time, and this anxiety that I wasn't aware of. And I only realized it once I stopped drinking. Mm. Like, and still to this day, like, I'm a very anxious person now. I wasn't like that before I started drinking. It's had like its long term effects on me, because I was drinking every day. Mm. I was drinking like, wine is €4 in Tesco, so you spend €20 on wine a night, and like you're plastered. And then I'd still try to go out with my friends after that. I was losing friends due to like me just getting aggressive and stuff when I was drunk, just because I really didn't want to be drinking.
What about your girlfriend?
Oh, that relationship ended. I think the problem was relationships I had at the time. I was still a person that had a lot to work on. You now I'm a person that fully believes you shouldn't get into a relationship until you've gone to therapy and until you've worked things out. Because even though the relationship is grand, I was just an anxious person, and it would cause like paranoia. And so like, that's just not a good mindset you want to be in. So that relationship ended. And like, I've been in a relationship since, and they've gone completely different since I've stopped drinking, because I'm just not like, I don't have this like, thought that people are talking about me anymore, or people don't want to be around me. I'm now just confident in myself. I'm like, it doesn't matter if people don't want to be around you. Fuck,
that's
fuck
a good them. Place to be, because then the person walks into your life at the right time, don't they?
But even when you do stop drinking, you probably have nothing in common with your old friends anymore if you're not drinking.
That's what I was going through kind of really the last couple of months, was like finding, like, now I see my friends that I used to hang out with every day, and it's kind of like, oh, hi, how are you getting on? Like, do you know, and that's it. That's all it is. Yeah, I guess the reason I drank was a fear of being alone, and then stopping drinking made me face that fear. Mm. And then like 2 weeks ago, I went to Rome for 3 days, and it was the first time I'd ever gone away by myself. Yeah. I was in bed on a Wednesday night. I text Gary going, what's the story for the week? Like with work, he was like, you're not needed till Monday. It was 11:55. I jumped up out of bed, hopped on the air coach at 1 a.m. on my way to Dublin Airport, just went into Skyscanner, flying from Dublin to anywhere in the world, go up, popped Rome for €60 return. I was like, I'm doing it. I'm going to prove to myself that I can be alone. Just and I went there and I spent 4 days there by myself, alone, without drink, without drugs, without fags, just fucking eating good food.
You're lucky Somalia didn't come up instead of Rome.
Well, I'm lucky. Yeah. I was like, I was really like, I'm going to go wherever it comes up here, but where is it going to be? Do you know, is it going to be somewhere that costs me a ton of money?
Whatever comes up here will have to be affordable too.
Yeah, that was it. Luckily,
give it a few spins.
Luckily, it turned out to be Rome, so it ended up being quite a nice trip. City.
Oh, do you know that? Those compulsive thoughts just is like
that's what I have.
Yeah, I used to get them, you know, on drinking drugs and like, but you know, to do it in your complete senses and to know what you're actually going to do.
Like it was just
you're going to enjoy it.
I was
it.
Like, I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I was like, it was really kind of like it almost felt like I was ending a chapter. It was like it felt like I was closing the book on the getting sober chapter. It was kind of like the reason you drank so much because you're afraid of being alone, and now you don't drink. Be alone. I wanted to put myself in a situation where I couldn't reach out to Gary and be like, Gary, I've nothing to do there. Let's do something. It was kind of like, no, I'm in Rome for 4 days. No matter who I get onto, no one's around to hang out with me. It's kind of like, just go and be by yourself.
How are you over there?
Oh yeah, unreal, fantastic.
Did you do all the sightseeing?
Yeah, I did all the sightseeing. On the Saturday, I went into Rome and I just turned off my phone and I just started wandering around streets for like 4 hours.
It's like walking through a movie instead of a historical movie. There's such history everywhere.
It's so rich in history. It's such a beautiful place. And like, I'm lucky I've been to quite a lot of places in Europe just due to back when I used to make videos and I used to travel. And like, Rome and Malta, I would put them up there on the same level of just like, they're beautiful to me because they look like they're lost in time. Do you know? Like, I don't know if you've ever been to Malta, but it looks...
I'm actually going there for Christmas.
Have you ever been there before?
Never.
Oh my God.
Valletta.
It's incredible. Valletta, yeah. Oh my God. It's incredible. And like, it literally just looks like it was lost in time. Mm. It's like the streets, some of the streets look so old. Mm. And like, that's what I liked about Rome as well. Yeah. Do you know, Rome was, it was still a city getaway, but it wasn't like... I was in Paris like a month and a half ago, and that was like a, you know, a city, like do you know. But Rome, while it was a city, it just felt different. It was lovely.
Can I ask you about your ADHD?
Mm-hmm.
Are you on medication for that?
No, I stopped taking it.
What's ADHD like?
So
maybe is it hard for you to explain because you've always had it?
Yeah, like what is it? I don't know what it is, but I know that when it gets to 7 or 8 p.m. every night, even if I'm tired, I stop feeling tired. My body gets this like sense of like just skin, like jitteriness.
Mm.
Like when it gets to evening times, I always want to find something to do, no matter if I've gotten up at 6 a.m. and I've worked all the way through. To me, it's like ADHD is just like this massive amount of energy I have that... Yeah, up until maybe 7 or 8 months ago, I never knew how to control. Mm-hmm. And so it would make me feel quite sad. Whereas now I kind of have a grip on it. I work quite a lot now. I work in the cabin doing workshops. I have tech-based workshops. I teach kids 3D printing. We did software development workshops for a little bit. I shoot music videos around the place. So
keep quite busy.
What I do is I keep myself quite busy. The problem is if I'm actually not busy... Like maybe a month ago, there was for like 4 days, I laid in my bed. I wasn't eating, like it wasn't showering. Like I suffer from seasonal affective disorder. So when November hit, because there's less light outside, I was just getting a bit sadder. Mm. I spent like 5 days lying in bed, just like not doing anything, like not moving really, just like getting up to go to the bathroom. And that was it.
That's actually quite common. I spoke to you before about that.
It's hard. Like it really is, because I really want to change it. And like now I'm lucky I've kind of gotten a grip on it again. But like, I remember when I was in the middle of it, like a month ago, like I wanted to get up and go shopping. Like I had this plan that if I bought like a notice board for my room and diaries, that I'd be able to keep more of a schedule. And I wanted to do that. And it took me 3 days to do it. I think I had the tall on Saturday, didn't go out Sunday, and I went out Monday, and literally all day on the Sunday it was just me trying to convince myself to have a shower, and I genuinely just couldn't get the energy.
Is that related to the ADHD?
No, I think it's I think it's a separate thing, but the ADHD is so contrastingly different that when I feel that, it's like, it feels like it feels like it feels like I'm on a come down whenever I'm going through that. Like that's, it just is.
It's just because it's so opposite. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like it's mad.
The ADHD is the energy, the high energy. Is that the only kind of symptom of it?
Well, my thoughts can be quite scattered. Like I find sometimes if I'm in a conversation with somebody and we're talking about something, I'll just say something completely unrelated and they'll be like, how, what?
I'm the exact same.
And they're always like, can you slow down, please?
Yeah.
So I suffer from that quite a lot now. I've tried to get control on it.
Is that the attention deficit piece?
Yeah, so it's attention deficit hyperactive disorder. I also have ADD, which is attention deficit disorder. And then I have ODD, which is oppositional defiance disorder.
Somebody that I knew has ADD or ADHD.
Yeah.
He was telling me like that one of the things that he experiences, if I said to him, go over there now, right? Pick the box up, put the box up there on top of that, next to the box. He finds it hard to imagine doing that.
Yeah.
Is that something?
No, I'm not. I don't have it like that. Like for me, the main thing is
abstract thought. Maybe
The main thing for me is just like this skittiness. Yeah. Like I'm always just like, if you watch back the video, I've been rubbing this table the entire time.
Fidgety.
For me, it's just that. Like that's why I kind of cover my hands in rings just so that I have something to be playing with.
Do you know? I have a question for you. For somebody that's into coding and sitting in front of a laptop and building websites and stuff with ADHD. Do you be impatient? Can you get it very, because I get very impatient.
What I find is, and coding, I haven't really worked on any projects for myself in a while, but I used to do mad stuff. Like I genuinely used to create like crazy stuff for like a 16-year-old. People were like, you didn't do that yourself. And it's because I could just sit there for like 14 hours. Like I didn't have to get up, go to the bathroom, didn't eat.
The mind is just occupied.
Yeah, like that heating system that I created, I basically put that together. Like we were working on it for ages and it wasn't working. And I basically spent 3 nights and I put this whole thing together. I won second place in like the whole of Ireland, the competition. Like I can just switch my brain on and go, okay, we're going to spend 14 hours doing this. And I'm a perfectionist. So when I walk out at the end of the 14 hours, like it's either going to be good, like perfect. Or one of my problems with college, back when I used to study multimedia, I now study community development in MTU, but back in St. John's, I used to do my assignments and delete them. Like I'd finish it and my teacher would be like, yeah, that's cool. You should submit that. And then I'd delete it. So I'd be like, it's not ready. Like it's not it. This one project, we had to do a lyric video in After Effects. So the lyrics had to come on time with the song and we were given 3 weeks to work on it. And 3 hours before it was to be submitted, I went in and my teacher was like, you're not starting it now. Like you can't. Did it and I got like 93% or something like that. So it's just like, that's my ADHD. My ADHD is like an entire group project we had that was supposed to be done over 3 months. I once did it in 12 hours and walked out with like 83%.
Tell us a little bit about the Cabin Studio for the people that don't know what it is.
So the Cabin Studio is like, it's like my, really, it's like the best part of my life.
Yeah.
I think like it's true. Gary McCarthy is how I got introduced to the Cabin Studio. And without that, I think I'd be in a very different place in my life. I wouldn't be here. The Cabin Studio is a youth and community space for young people that's based on the north side of Knocknaheeny in Hollyhill.
On the campus of Terence McSweeney.
So just in front of Terence McSweeney School. And the Cabin Studio is a multimedia hub. It used to be a singing and songwriting space, but over the last couple, kind of 2 years, really, it's grown. Now there's acting workshops, there's coding workshops, there's playwriting workshops, poetry workshops, dance workshops, filmmaking workshops, a bit of everything. How I got introduced to the Cabin was in 2017, when I started my course. I did film and TV for a year before I did 2 years of multimedia. I reached out to Gary, being like, what's the story? Gary, can I do work experience with you, please, bud? And he was like, yeah, savage, come on. And I did it up in the Cabin and I did it for like 2 weeks. And I guess I made a good impression because Gary was like, you should start coming up here more often. Mm. So 2018, I was up there quite a bit attending the workshops, but really I didn't like attending. I kind of liked more helping out.
Mm.
And then in 2018, I started, this ETB got me to help out at a summer camp up there. I got like maybe 6 hours or something working in the summer camp up there. And then I guess it made such a good impression that in 2019, I got more hours working with kids up there. In 2019, I also started to then work in Mahin and Bishopstown and all these other youth projects, as well, tutoring, teaching kids multimedia. But I really, my main focus was the cabin. And over like the last 2 years, the cabin has just grown beyond whatever it was 4 years ago. It's massively different now. There's so much happening. On Friday, we went to the Late Late Toy Show. Two of the kids up there, Jeremy Ford and Coben Cullen. What's the story, lads, if you're watching this? They performed in a choir with Ed Sheeran. And then afterwards, they both played a game with Ed Sheeran and he asked them to rap for him, which was like quite savage. Another big thing in the cabin is we recently got a grant from TikTok X St. Patrick's Festival Foundation. And that was a grant of 10 grand to work on a big project for St. Patrick's Day. We're going to do a female independence project. I like that outfit. Are you going to?
That was backstage in RT. That's Ryan Tubridy's Late Late Show outfit, or the tie show.
The get up he has.
Yeah. And then that was the other ones. But
is that a lobster?
Yeah,
it's a lobster.
But when we were backstage with Claiborne, we tried to try on Ryan Tubridy's outfits for the previous ones, but they wouldn't go on.
Connor, that you were on about earlier, is talking to Claiborne tonight. So shout out to Connor if you're watching this. He's talking to them tonight. But yeah, so the cabin just grew to this massive thing, and started doing, I guess last year as well, I started doing admin work for Gary for his own company, GMC Beats. Through that, I started doing more admin work for the cabin. And then over the last year, I guess I've just been helping out a lot more there and running the workshops and just making sure that the place is going. Like I love that place. It's my entire life. That's what keeps me
going. When we were starting out on the podcast before we had a studio, I actually was on to Gary and he kindly offered that we could use the cabin to do the podcast, but we ended up going with Timmy's shed just because sometimes we do late nights and weekends and we needed control over the venue. So thanks to Gary for that.
Thanks, Gary.
I'd love to do a podcast up there.
You should. Do you know, we have a group called The Happening Podcast, who are a group of 15 and 16 year olds. They do their own podcast in the green room. They've kind of learned how to edit it now and stuff like that which is mad. They're doing live podcasts sometimes.
What are they called again?
If he came up sometime and they could interview you, that would be class. We'll put you on the other side. It's called The Happening Podcast. H-A-P-N-I-N Podcast.
Happening,
And if you wanted to come up and leave them interview you, that would be great.
That'd be great. We'd love to do that.
We'll sort that out.
Are you into the rapping?
I used to make tunes when I was younger. I used to perform with Jedward. I opened for them at the Rose of Tralee on Dennehy Street stage for like 6,000 people a couple of years ago.
You're only fucking 22, but you're after living some life.
I did that when I was like 13 or 14. That was mad. Like 6,000 people at a 20-minute set. Performed with them on RT as well a couple of times. And then I just used to make my own little tunes and kind of send them out there. But I don't really do that anymore. I still have a bit of a mental block from when I was bullied about it. I record a couple of tunes now, but I still don't have the confidence to post them yet.
Can you sing?
Can I sing? I think I can sing, but other people say, no, you can sing a little bit, but I don't know.
What's your passion in music? Is it creating the beats?
I used to think my passion was in music, but I think my passion is just helping people.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's anything really. Yeah. Like, you know, when I'm doing videos in the cabin or whether I'm
music
doing...
Music might be the medium or...
Yeah, like music, video. Like at the moment I'm teaching a group of kids 3D printing and like we're creating models and they're printing it. You know, that might be the medium, but it's like, but really what I'm trying to do is I'm just there to help people.
Yeah.
I guess I've always been someone that tried to help people when I was younger, even if I wasn't doing it very right. I didn't know the right ways. And sometimes it came across as annoying and people were probably kind of sick of me. But there was always good behind it, even if I couldn't show it. Now, I guess I've just learned how to show that. I'm in my second year of community development.
How's
in
that
CIT.
Going,
good. Yeah. It's, it can be a bit of a struggle sometimes, just because it's all online. I've never, like,
Even this year?
Yeah. I think we had 4 days where we, and it wasn't even in campus. It was in Nexus Supervalue in Holly Hill, Tony Fitzgerald's spot there. We went in there. We had 4 classes or 5 classes in there. But it's quite hard. My brain is struggling to really see it as real because it's just all online. I'm getting it done, but it's just, it's definitely a mental struggle. That's one of the things I struggle with the most, is just like, okay, you need to do college stuff.
Just grind it out. You have your qualification.
And that's it. Like, I just, you know, once it's done, it's done. And like, I'm lucky I'm supported by aftercare, because growing up in foster care. So as long as I'm still in college, they're there to support me up until I'm 23.
What does life look for Sean Downey in 5-6 years time?
So I want to create, I want to continue working in the cabin because it's my favorite place in the entire world. But I also, I guess I want to kind of create a bit of a media network inside of Cork City. I'm currently looking at connecting with other video makers and music producers and animators and stuff in the city.
Shout out, Leanna.
There'll be a spot for you. But I guess, so the cabin is working with young people, and I want to try and replicate what happens in the cabin, but I guess for older people. So that would be more like commercial stuff. The cabin isn't commercial. The cabin is just like, we're facilitating workshops and we're giving opportunities to these kids. But I would like to start maybe working on something commercial, and just kind of creating a bit of a network. Just, I guess I'm quite lucky when I talk to people, and I'm quite lucky that I'm able to create opportunities. That's one thing I found about myself. I'm always creating good opportunities. So I wonder, can I connect with other creatives inside of Cork that are around my age that haven't been able to create those opportunities? And can I just start piecing people together? Can I go, you make videos, here's a sound producer, here's an artist, now make a project together and we'll put it under this name, this collective name. That's a plan I have, but that's a long way.
If you're doing a U Club for adults, I'd be all over that.
Will you be into it? There's, I have that plan, and I guess as well, like, I'm doing, studying community development, so it would just be to really kind of, I think I'd do a postgrad in youth work, not at the moment, like when I'm done this next year of college, I'll be in college 6 years. So like, I need a bit of a break.
And you're only 22.
I'm only 22. Yeah, I don't stop. Like, I'm just keep going.
You're after living the life of a 40-year-old.
Could I give you a small bit of advice as well about your story from just listening to you?
Go ahead.
I think your story is phenomenal in terms of you'll inspire a lot of people in residential care. I think you should be going into residential care places.
That is
maybe you're not Toastless' favorite person.
That's part of the plan, but I need to get, that's why I just want to get this community development course done. I feel like at the moment I'm just a kid with a story, but if I'm a kid with a story with a degree, it legitimizes it. And then, because a lot of residentials, it's very sensitive information, so it's hard to just, you can't just walk up to a residential and be like, let me come in there and tell you my story.
You have to have the credentials.
So it's true, things like Davey's stuff is seen. That's really why I went on it as well, was just like, I spoke a lot about foster care and they cut all that out. You actually, from watching it can be hard to tell them in foster care, but that's what I talked about. I just want to show other kids in care that were in my situation at the age of 11, that were talking about getting sent to secure lockup with bars on the window and had to go to like a justice project, and were terrified that, like, you know, things can work out. And I guess I want to, through the cabin, I'm already doing it, but I want to kind of spread out the reach of the cabin and start providing creative opportunities to tons of different young people. I feel like a lot of people in residential just don't know how to express themselves. And if they did, their stories would be a lot different. So it's just, how do we teach those people to express themselves?
Do you have a relationship today with your biological parents and your foster parents?
Yeah, so I just was at my foster parents' house 2 weeks ago, and I talk to my regular parents all the time. Shout out to my mom, Julianne, my dad, Shawnee, my foster parents, Bill and Ursula. That's the story. But I have great relationships with all of them.
That's good.
It was just important for me, I guess, to keep that. You know, I don't blame anyone in my life for anything that happened. If I could go back, I wouldn't change anything.
Things worked out well.
Things worked out. Like, if I had continued
to grow. We always say the same, don't we? Yeah.
If I had continued to grow in the environment I was in, my life would be very different. I'd probably be on the streets. I don't know. But my parents wouldn't have had the means to look after me at this age. You know, I would have ended up in the streets. So it was all for good. The things went the way they did.
That's good. Do you know the young people that you were in care with?
Yeah.
Have you ever met them, or do you know what their outcomes were like?
No, I a couple of people, I know that they're doing good. They're doing good. One person I lived with sadly passed away a couple of months ago. So that was just through the health complications. But that was a bit tough. Mm-hmm. And all my other foster brothers, I had foster sisters in residential, but I was too young to really kind of remember those. Mm. All my other foster brothers, they seem to be doing quite well.
Good.
Yeah, I guess it's just like, it's mad because I always forget how many people I really lived with, you know, like I lived with, especially in the residential, I lived with quite a lot of people. And it's like, sometimes I forget how many. I'm actually going to be having a phone call with my first ever social worker at the end of this week, which is going to be mad. She was my social worker from maybe like 3 to like the age of like 9 or 10 or something like that. She was my social worker for 7 years.
How are you feeling about it?
Oh, like she has no idea what I'm like now. I remember she once had to like try bribe me to get me into school. So she has no idea what I'm like. So it's just, I want to be like, thank you a lot. Because she's my memory of social workers that were nice to me. And whenever growing up, I was dealing with like a bad social worker, I'd keep the memory of her.
Yeah.
And she moved away for a while. Like she moved out of the country. So that's why she stopped being my social worker. I heard recently she was back. So I just want to be like, thank you. Like, you don't know, do you know, Gary's one massive part of my life that made it go right. But there was all these other people like my foster parents and stuff like that along the way. And I just want to start thanking those people and being like, you mightn't have seen what's been happening the last couple of years, but this is where I'm at. And like, you know, thank you.
And I'd say everybody be very proud of you. I'm very proud of you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thanks, lad.
You're an inspirational young man.
Thank you.
And you're going to do great things with your life. You already are. You've done so much already.
And you know,
you don't waste a day.
The way you articulated your story,
it's
brilliant, and everybody will understand this.
Thank you very much.
It's not a surprise why he gets called back for conferences, because you're a great communicator.
No. I guess, you know, growing up for me, I just really realised in the setting I was in that, like, I really wanted to do something more than where I was. Mm. And I think that's why I got very angry as a kid. I wanted to start expressing myself. I just didn't know how. So then once I finally learned how to, I just worked on mastering it like a craft. Yeah. I would watch videos of people delivering speeches, and I would just copy. I would just try to deliver this speech along with them, watch videos, and this is how you say these words, and just try and like really just like, you know, just be able to present myself. Because I wanted to try and, after that video happened and that whole conference thing, I wanted to try and be a voice for people in foster care that don't have a voice. Like a lot of other young people in my situation when brought to court would have just backed down. Mm. They would have been like, oh, I'm not allowed to leave up that video. Okay. But having that video is kind of what changed my life. You know, my social workers argued that I should stop being in my room and I should go out and make friends. And this is part of the reason they tried to stop me making the videos.
Yeah.
When I did stop being in my room and go out and make friends at 18, I got a drinking problem. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So like, I want to be there for kids that social workers are maybe saying things that mightn't really be what's best for them.
And it just goes to show as well, like if you're working in a school or something and the child is misbehaving and stuff like that, you know, maybe there's stuff going on and the child hasn't got the vocabulary to articulate it, so they get frustrated, and the only way they can express it is through actions. So if we take that violence away from the podcast, we'll take that. You've been a great guest, Sean.
Thank you very much. Just a message to anyone watching, if there's any young people watching, or if there is parents, foster parents that have kids that are maybe in a situation to what I described, look up The Cabin Studio on Instagram, THEKABIN Studio, cabin with a K. We have creative workshops that happen quite regularly, and maybe there's a space there for you. Maybe we'd be able to facilitate something you want to do.
And the famous MC Tiny.
It's MC Tiny and all the lads there, all of you out there, the lads are just incredible, you know.
And we look forward to our invite, and we see you all up there.
Perfect. Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.